we go.
Welcome to the FTN Dynasty Podcast.
Helping you create the ultimate dynasty.
Welcome to the NFL.
Here's your host, Jeremy Popolars.
Let's go!
Welcome in. Jeremy Popolars here with you as always. The FTN Dynasty Podcast is back with another season preview. This time, we're going to be talking the NFC West. We've made it now completely through the NFC, so if you've not caught the South, East, and North, head on over, check those out. Those are a great time. This time I have fellow FTN creator Laquan with me. We're talking NFC West here. You know, got to bring the Rams fan on. I've been trying to find a fan of each team. Didn't have it with Pete, but Laquan, I got you here for the West. We're going to talk about the Rams at some point. Going to make you wait till the end. But Laquan, let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going on. Obviously killing it over here at FTN.
Absolutely, man. You guys can find me at Real Deal Fantasy on all social media platforms, man. Tumblr, MySpace. Yeah, we're still out here, man. If it's a social media, I'm on there. Real Deal Fantasy.
MySpace. Whew.
Gotta update my top eight,
that's
man.
That's a throwback. That is a throwback. Jeez. Oh, you were going to say man. AIM in there as well.
Jeez, AIM. Oh, my God. I forgot my screen name, actually, so I can't plug that.
Ah, shoot. Darn. All right, Laquan. Again, FTN Fantasy, check it all out. Laquan has some great videos out there, etc. We are pushing that content. It is draft season, so check it all out. And Dynasty, it's heating up, Laquan. You know, trades are starting to fly. We're getting news. Anthony Richardson getting hurt right before we start the podcast. You know, it's crazy. Just chaos out there. But one thing that wasn't, and I want a non-Bills bias opinion. Did you like the first episode of Hard Knocks, or did you not watch it yet?
I started watching it and I ended up falling asleep, and I'm going to rewatch it though. But I did see some people on the timeline saying that it was boring and like there wasn't much on. Not
it
much action,
a boring episode.
But see, all right. So you're a Bills fan. So I will rewatch it because I think I fell asleep like right when I started to get hooked into it. And like, more so, obviously, we're going to be following this James Cook, you know, holding in, holding out, whatever the case may be. But I do want to see the inside of, like, what's going on in Buffalo. Because, like, I want to see Josh Allen's personality. I want to see Ray Davis. I want to see Dalton Kincaid show a little bit more personality. I mean, you got Dawson Knox out here on podcast, you know, showing some personality. He wants to be an actor. Pope, like, what's going on with that?
Who knows? I love Dawson Knox. I do. I wish, you know, the Kincaid pick never made a ton of sense. Like, I got it. Like, I get what they're trying to do. But, like,
yeah,
I was like, Knox is pretty solid, you know, good personality, really fits the room. And like you said, and in the first episode, spoiler alert, you don't see too much on Kincaid. So hopefully we see a little bit more of that as it progresses. But I'll agree that it was a little, there wasn't much that happened in that first episode.
I like the trade.
I thought it was
Sunday,
solid.
The trade day Sunday, whatever it's called. That thing looked good.
Yeah.
With a little whipped cream and ice cream.
Yeah.
I might have to make that myself, man. That
I know. Like I might have to drive up to Rochester for it. I'm like,
right?
It's only an hour away. From drive. Me.
Oh,
not
wow.
For me.
Oh,
it's an hour. I'm right here. Might have to go get me one of those. But yeah, I'm excited. You know, one fact I took away that I should probably know, I didn't realize the Bills were only one of five teams that did training camp out of college. Do you know that?
Wow. Okay.
I didn't know that.
The other one. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I didn't even know that. I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. So that was a fun nugget. Other than that, yeah, you know, I live in Buffalo, so I know the Josh personality, et cetera. It's all over the news. So, but I think you'll like it. It could be contrared as a slow episode. I could get that, but
it's all good.
I still enjoyed it. Still loved it, but Bills fan bias here. So I wanted to hear a little bit from someone who isn't. All right, Laquan, let's just dive in to the NFC West here. All right,
let's do it.
So when it comes down to the NFC West, we're looking at really some big question marks, I feel like, in a lot of these teams. There's a lot of dynasty as well as, honestly, redraft 2025 players that we're going to have some strong investment in that have some serious question mark, whether it's at the helm at quarterback or their actual situation. So we're going to start off with the Seahawks here with what is a very interesting case at quarterback, going from the resurrection project in Geno Smith that worked out for them to now Sam Darnold, who is not going to necessarily resurrect in Seattle, but did in Minnesota. Some early camp stuff looks pretty solid again from Darnold. It kind of seems like that year in Minnesota really allowed him to find that clicking of the mental side of the game. The talent's always been there for Darnold. So can we trust Sam Darnold as a dynasty investment at quarterback? Like, was it a one-year wonder and you think here now in Seattle, new system, it may fall off? Or do you really think that that was Sam Darnold's coming out party last season?
I think that was coming out party for Sam Darnold. Like, I'm actually rooting for him. I know I'm a Rams fan and he's a rival within the division, but I'm rooting for him to go out there and put some good stuff on tape, because when you look at last year, it's like he kind of was thrown into the fire, like thrown into the sharks, because the plan was that JJ was going to start and Sam was going to be the backup. And then you see him kind of jump in and just take the reins. Like, no, I'm QB1. Like, the talent's always been there for Sam. The situations around him have always been dumpster fire situations. Like, you go back to Carolina, like, he started off hot. You know, I know we all remember the first couple of weeks where he was looking like a mobile quarterback. Like, he low key has wheels. But I'm looking at this situation from a dynasty standpoint. Like, I am so happy I held on. I'm so happy I didn't dump him off. I'm so happy I didn't give up on him when he was in San Francisco. Like, you're one of those dynasty managers that are like, I'm glad I waited. And like, that just makes you look at the rest of your room and be a little bit more patient for guys that haven't really hit their ceilings or even hit near their type of peak of what the upside looks like. So it's like Sam Darnold in Seattle, it just makes you feel good as a dynasty manager. Like, hey, I have a potential QB1 along with whatever else I have in the room. Like, my one buddy, he has Patrick Mahomes and he has Anthony Richardson and Sam Darnold. And he's sitting here telling me, like, hey, man, I need a little bit more support at the quarterback position. I'm like, no, you don't. You got Sam Darnold, man. He's paid. He's happy. The mental game, like, that he was playing with himself, you know, Paul's out of, you know, New York and then going to Carolina and San Francisco. I think as the coaching, you know, I would say, I want to be a nice guy, I'm not going to say they sucked, but as the coaching experience kind of got better along his way with Shanahan and KOC, then you're sitting here now with Clint Kubiak as the offensive coordinator. A very young mind, and I definitely think he'll be able to play the strengths with Sam Darnold just based on the offense that's around him. The pieces are great.
Yeah, I can agree with that tenfold. I'm a little bit less in on Darnold being like, I need to see it a little bit in Seattle. But like you said, he's not a player that I'm actively moving, I would say, especially in super flex formats. And much to what you said, you know, that developmental process for a quarterback has always been something that the landing spot, when you want to argue landing spots in dynasty or at rookie drafts, quarterback's really the only one that kind of matters, in my personal opinion, because it's the situation they're walking into that can affect everything. You know, we've seen Darnold, that same draft class with Josh Allen, same draft class with all of these other players that have just fell off. And one of the ones that they didn't really expect to have it was Josh Allen. You know, same thing when Lamar went so late, like Jalen Hurts went so late, like these players that are kind of somewhatly cast off. You find that right spot for them and that situation starts to click, and the better coaching just helps propel a position that really is at least probably 75% mental, arguably. Yeah. You know, I mean, the talent has to be there, but every player is usually talented enough at the NFL level. It all comes down to that mental side of it. And you saw that click, like you said, with Darnold, whether it was in San Francisco and he got some of that coaching, or it really was in Minnesota where it all really truly came together. And I'm rooting for him. Like you said, I'm not investing in him. I'll say that. Like, if I have him, like you said, if you held on and you still have him, I'm not looking to move him. Like, he's a very solid quarterback too. Type of backup quarterback situation. I'm cool with Ryan. Like your buddy had said, you know, him paired with Anthony Richardson as my second quarterback. I like that. You know, the upside is in Anthony Richardson if he can pan out, and you've got the safety blanket in Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
All right. Still in Seattle. What are we doing with the Ken Walker versus Zach Charbonnet? Charbonnet has looked very muchly capable of being a lead back when he's been called upon, with Ken Walker missing time. But the talent, undeniably, Ken Walker is probably arguably the more talented of the two physically. So are you in on either of these, or is it kind of like a messy enough backfield that you're just kind of like, I don't really want to invest a ton on them at all in Dynasty?
I want Charbonnet. Like, I think with Ken Walker and his injury history, like, the talent is there. Like, if you have him, good for you. But if you got Zach, hold strong, because Zach has shown that he could be a starter in this league. He's shown that he could step right in as soon as Ken Walker's not available. We're already slapping Zach Charbonnet as our RB2 in our lineups. Like, he's a lock as a every week starter, because honestly, with Ken Walker in the mix, like, I do feel like it kind of scares some folks to invest in Charbonnet and not knowing what that price would really be to get him in return. Cause I'm pretty sure the folks who have him understand how talented he is, that he is a huge asset, and that he is a huge handcuff if you end up having Ken Walker in your roster as well. So prying that from a manager right now is going to be impossible. It's one of those things, like, you're going to have to give an arm and a leg probably to get a Zach Charbonnet if Ken Walker gets hurt again this year. And it's one of those things, like, you know what? Scared money don't make money. And I like investing in good, talented players that have that upside and potential and familiarity with the team. Like, Zach Charbonnet ain't no, like, no, he ain't no stranger to go out there and put up 100 yards. He's just as explosive. He can be utilized in the passing game as well. So it's not like you're getting a completely different type of back that has to play a different role. These guys are very similar in what they can do. But Ken Walker, he has that top five potential in him. Like, we see how explosive he could be when healthy. We see what he could do in the passing game, in between the tackles, bouncing outside. And with Clint Kubiak, man, I think he's going to get career highs either one of these backs, whoever's going to be available. So I'm all on board with the Seattle running backs, man.
I like it. So you're going to invest in the cheaper of the two when you get into situations where both are productive. So, for actionable advice, would you take a second rounder in 2026 for Charbonnet if you rostered him, or would you still ride it out?
I would ride it out.
And what projects as a weaker class in 2026 than what we had this last year?
I would need a 27 too. Put it like that. I would need something in 27. It's not going to be a first. Nobody's going to give up a first, but I need future assets. You know, like, I need something in 27 to say, hey, I can cover my ground if I end up losing on this deal, and I end up being able to have 2 years to make up for that deal. You know what I mean? I get a little redemption.
All right. And would you actively try for Charbonnet if you had Ken Walker? Are you going to be proactive in that way? Handcuffing can go different ways with different people. In Dynasty, if I have at one time, Nick Chubb, you know, I wanted the backup in Cleveland, you know, like, that's kind of how it rolled. Like, in that room, sure. Or even like Buffalo, you know, like, there's a clear kind of backup. And I feel like that's how it is here in Seattle. Like, if Walker goes down, it's Charbonnet. Like, you know, you're not getting a split backfield like you might in other places. So, would you grab Charbonnet in that instance?
No, because I think I will be giving up more, because Zach Charbonnet, I honestly think if somebody's going to be interested, if somebody pings me right now and they want Zach Charbonnet, I want starter type of like compensation, because I know what he could do when Ken Walker's available. So if I'm Ken Walker, I'm not willing to give up those assets to pay the arm and a leg. I could just hit the draft and try to mirror some type of like value of what Charbonnet is. Exactly. You know, like, I would hate to try to do that, and then you end up losing both, you know, on the end.
And in those instances, you know, sometimes if the other manager knows you have Ken Walker, they're like, oh, you really want him. I know why. So now it's more money for you.
Exactly. You're going to tax it.
Getting taxed extra on that one.
Yeah, man.
But moving on to the receivers. JSN, great start there in Seattle this past season. Really kind of put it together, we'll say, for fantasy aspects. Is he a dynasty wide receiver one for you? Top 12, if you had rankings dropped right now. Would you put him in the top 12, or is he still just on the outside?
Oh, man, I need to see this offense. And I say that because, like, today I would not put him in the top 12. If we get more clarity of the identity of the Seahawks offense, then maybe, because 82% of the time he played in the slot last year, we haven't seen him exclusively play outside. And obviously they're going to have to accommodate for Cooper Kupp being a slot guy, because I don't think Cooper Kupp can win on the outside of the perimeter as much as he used to. Like, I don't think they're getting triple crown Cooper Kupp. So it's like, I don't want JSN swapping in and out of the slot and playing out wide. So I feel like we have to see what the identity of this offense is first before we start shooting him to the moon. Because I think him getting 100 catches last year with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf is freaking phenomenal. But that's last year. This is a whole new offensive coordinator. This is an O-line that still needs help developing. And we've seen Sam Darnold in the playoffs collapse against my Rams in the playoffs when it came to that pressure. You're going to have to see us twice a year every year, by the way. So it's one of those things where I think that that O-line still has some concerns. We have the question mark. There's nothing in stone about Sam Darnold. So it's like for the next 3 years, where does JSN sit? Is he going to sit in the inside of that top 12, or is he going to be on the outside looking in, being that there's still confusion of what this offensive identity is?
That's fair. I would agree. I feel like I'm a big JSN fan. I liked JSN coming out. I was an advocate to draft him higher in rookie drafts. But I agree. I don't know if he's fully there. I still feel like the top 12 at receiver feels pretty locked, and I don't know if he's really, really in there yet. He's on the fringe, 100% for me. Like if you said
13,
I was gonna say like top 15, I'd probably give you at the moment, because as much as Dynasty is a long game, it still reflects adjustment year over year, and I feel like what he did last year earns him enough respect to be at least top 20, top 15. So I'm in on it, being 15, and I agree. I think 12, I could make a case, though, probably. But like you said, you you really see it, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think that the key that sticks out in that comment of, like, you're not getting Triple Crown Cooper Kupp, like, who else is there? You know, are we expecting Arroyo and Barner to step up in that capacity? Yeah. Like, is Jake Bobo going to be anything? You know what I mean? Like, there's NBS, not much Torrey Horton, there.
Ricky White, the names go
I love me Torrey Horton. I love me Ricky White. But I don't, they're not JSN. Like,
no.
For their values in Ricky White and Torrey Horton, they're intriguing. And I do love
Ricky Torrey White Horton. Makes the team.
But, yeah, Ricky White, I think he will. I think it's going to be the special teams that Ricky White's going to get his way on the team. But Torrey Horton's really the one that you're really hoping becomes something. But still feels like a player that doesn't affect JSN that much for a team that throws the ball a lot. I know it's a new offensive coordinator, but I still think that you could make that case that he should be. But I get it. See it first. Dynasty, we got some time. And the value between, you know, I think he's priced as a wide receiver one anyways. So, like, if you wait, it's not going to get that much worse to acquire the gap, to be honest. Yeah. So, and who knows? Maybe he falls off and you can buy the dip, you know? You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
All right. Let's talk about another exciting team. We'll save the Cardinals squashed in between the exciting teams and your team. Someone wants to talk about the Cardinals, right? 49ers, though. Obviously, they can't keep receivers. I don't know what to do with them, so I'm going to ask you what to do with them, because apparently every receiver that goes to San Francisco needs a new contract and or just, you know, gets hurt in some capacity.
Yeah.
So where are you? Obviously, Brandon Ayuk, great investment long-term-ish in Dynasty. I know the injuries, you know, sets them back a bit, but still a solid investment, in my opinion. And then after that, you've got Jennings, DeMarcus Robinson's there, Ricky Parasol, Jacob Cowing. Like, there's a list of guys. Lots of hope in some of these players. But where are you, like, dynasty-wise? I mean, 2025 as well, because now Jennings with trade issues, some injuries are popping up there in camp. So where are you, I guess, with this receiver room?
Ayuk, I'm holding, because at least we've seen like a 1300 yard season from him. Like, we've seen where he can go in his ceiling. We've seen him play the one of this offense. Kittle's going to be there for the next 3 years. He's signed. He's good to go. So as long as the formula just remains of what the 49ers want to do, I feel okay with Brandon Ayuk. Everybody else, these are just guys. These are flash in the pan guys. Like, I feel like you're taking a huge risk if you're investing right now. If you're going out trying to acquire Ricky Pearsall, you haven't seen anything. You're probably investing in a guy that's like the fourth or fifth target of this offense, because CMC is back. And there's always going to be a running back there that's going to take some type of targets, because Shanahan, he's going to have that type of system implemented there. We've seen it with Raheem Mostert. We've seen it with Elijah Mitchell. Like, we've seen it with these 49ers run backs. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play fast, and they're going to catch some passes. So Ricky Pearsall to me, and like, I guess DeMarcus Robinson's interesting, but he's facing some type of suspension where I feel like this year there's no relevance in him. So it's like, I, at the end of the day, it's like, it's Ayuk or nothing when it comes to these wide receivers, at least with me. Like, I'm not like you said it, like before you even went into and teeing it up, like these guys want a new contract or they're hurt. Like there's not really much security of like having clarity of like the investment you just made or the asset that you have on your rosters right now. Cause it's like, I could drop this guy now. He could be somebody else's headache, you know, at the end of the day, other than Ayuk. But like I said, I'm hands off of every other wide receiver not named Brandon Ayuk.
Solid strategy as well. That goes underrated, you know, let someone else be the headache.
Yeah.
To another player and manager. But you're right. Like Jennings, yes, he had the flash at the end of the season, but like, does that continue? He's been a kind of a journeyman receiver. Like, was it a flash in the pan? Is it kind of a system help situation? And I'd agree. Very I think Ayuk's worth it. You know, like we've seen it. We know who he is long term. It's going to be there. After that, I agree. I don't think I'm really investing. Maybe as a contender, I'm looking at Jennings if he stays. You know, if he yeah. stays, gets healthy. Like, there's going to be somebody that pops off this year to an extent. I don't think it's going to be a full committee. I don't know if it's going to be Pearsall or Jennings. I never loved Pearsall's game at Florida, but he's a very good route runner, can create separation. So there's a good chance Shanahan can find a way to get him the football. So there, I get the investment. It just comes at cost. You know, what does it cost you to get him? Feels a little high right now. So I would probably be out, like you said. And you mentioned Kittle there in that list of pass catchers. That's the next question. We know, and honestly, this year it's teeing up for him to be tight end one potentially. Do you think there's long-term value still in Kittle? I know he signed the contract in Dynasty. I played 2-3 year windows. I feel like that's gaining some popularity here amongst the format of looking at that smaller window. But do you think we've got those 2-3 years out of him? Another player that has had injury issues because of the way he plays the game. Do you think you're investing in him? Because right now he's hot. He's a hot item. Yeah. You're going to pay a lot to get Kittle, especially tight end premiums, stuff like that. Like, would you pay that cost because you know you've got 2-3 years, or are you concerned that he might not make that length of that contract?
If he's a piece that I'm missing to get the job done this year, like if I have a contender team, like I am just missing this piece, like this tight end that can hit those.
You got
highs.
Kyle Pitts or you got Kincaid right now.
Yeah. Oh, God, man. And you're sitting with Hunter Henry and Zach Ertz and like, God,
yeah.
Listen, and the thing with Kittle, man, like even though he has the injury history, he bounces back and he still returns on his cost. And like now, like, I feel like if you're looking at a 2-year window, you have that with Kittle. Like, I really think that you have a 2-year window right now. If you're competing and you're contending right now, I'm going to go pay that cost. You know what I mean? Because if I'm good everywhere else on the depth chart and I'm looking at 26 or 27 in these draft assets, I'm willing to give them off. You want a second? You want 2 seconds? You like, here you go. I'll make a package if it's 2 seconds in the third and 26. Like, let's do it. And I will do that so I can get the glory and the win in year one and year two in that window that Kittle has left. So it's like, you got to play with the money. Like, you got to gamble a little. Like, scared money don't make money. Like, I look at my picks right now with some of my dynasty rosters. Like, I put on my Les Snead hat. F them picks. Let's go. Let's wheels up. Let's get them in here now and let's get this roster in shape. And again, I see people that have certain missing pieces, but they don't want to spend the draft picks. Like, the draft picks come with question marks. You don't know who you're drafting. You don't know who's going to be there. Like, honestly, when you look at like 26 or 27, you look at your second round picks, you have no idea who you're going to get there. You have no idea where the market's going to go. Ship them. If you know your league mates and their tendencies and they value draft picks more than you, ship them. Like, just get the pieces that you need to win. And Kittle, to me, that is a perfect tight end that has top three upside at each and every year that we've seen him play.
No, I 100% agree. And it's about 30% the second round picks have hit over the past few seasons. I have it here. Let me pull it up. Where is it? Here we go. So since 2020, now this is top 24 for quarterback, top 36 for running back, top 48 for wide receiver, top 12 for tight end. That's what I used as a hit in the way. So the second round picks, totally 28% since 2020. Of average ADP from March, well, May of rookie drafts. So 28% of the time your third or second round pick hits. So
and it's not high.
Second and then third rounds are 16%. So seconds and thirds are literal dart throws. First round, you're at like 70%. So much to what LQ said, hold the first rounders. Send those seconds and thirds. Get Kittle on the roster and really fill that out. Especially at tight end, I do feel like, especially 2025 and 2026, we're talking about question marks at that receiver position. Kittle's going to be a big part of this passing attack and arguably has a fair case to be the tight end one. I know everybody loves Bowers and I love McBride, but Kittle should probably be in that discussion with what has unfolded thus far. And a guy that we're going to talk about here next in McCaffrey. I know you said he's back. Is he a top three running back, though, this season? Again, another guy that could have an expanded role from what it was last year, obviously. But a very big role in this offense because of the issue at receiver. If healthy, I mean, he's still Christian McCaffrey, you know. Yeah. But if he goes down again, that's another bump for Kittle. So where are you at with CMC? Obviously coming off the injury and in redraft, very affordable, kind of the end of the first at the turn for some of these. I was in an FSGA draft and he went third. I think someone pulled him off at third in one of the expert drafts. So some people are in still on some CMC. Are where are you there on the temp page for CMC?
CMC is risky, man. And I think that we've seen this story play out before he came to San Francisco. And that's when he was in Carolina. I mean, those back-to-back seasons, he didn't look like he was ready in, I would say, that second year. I think it was 2020 when he came back, played like seven games. And like in those seven games, like he looked okay, not good, not great, you know? And like, I feel like we're at that point now. He's returning back from injury once again. And I think Shanahan might kind of pull the touches back because you have Jordan James there, who broke his finger today, by the way, which is terrible. But you have Isaac Garendo. Like, you have pieces that can share this workload. I don't think you need CMC leading the league in touches again. I don't think you need him leading yards and scrimmage. And like, you don't need him to be the absolute focus of the offense when you have other ways to find functions of this offense with a Brandon Ayuk, a George Kittle, and Ricky Pearsall. Like, I do think that a lot of people are still stuck on that CMC high of the old and not really looking at, he's getting up there in age. Like, the dude just had a kid. He just got married. Like, real life is happening for this guy. Like, he's already looking to transition after football, if you ask me. But like, I'm no
pro athlete, but I got a kid, and man, I'm tired all the time. So I'm just saying.
I got two of them little rascals around here, bro. I am so washed.
I am very still iffy on CMC, man. I would be in on him, I think, in redraft. I know it's a risk.
Yeah.
Or if his cost isn't terrible. I don't know truthfully what the market really is. I haven't seen anybody in my leagues try to trade for CMC. I haven't actively tried at the moment. But like, if his cost isn't terrible, I'd maybe think about it as a contender. But I don't want him to be like my staple. No, you know, like I'd like to not have to trade, like, say I had like Gibbs for some reason and that was it. Like, the rest of my running backs were bad. Like, if I could get CMC without having to give up Gibbs and like that was the pair, like I would be in on it, you know, but it depends on the cost for me with CMC. I think he's probably not a top three guy. I feel like Bijan, Gibbs, and then, I mean, maybe, I guess it opens up kind of there. Barkley, though, I feel like question will be off the workload. You know, we've seen that from CMC in the past. You know, these guys that had that huge workload kind of fall off the next year a little bit. So I'm a little worried with Barkley, but I do think it gets interesting at three. You know,
hot, like, take. I know we're not talking the North, but I think Josh Jacobs may have something to say this year. I think
Jacobs,
Yeah, he may be a top five or top three guy. That Packers offense was good. And I think adding Golden, it just creates even more scoring opportunities. Like, they'll be able to stretch the field and move up closer to striking distance. And we've seen how good Josh Jacobs has been in the red zone. He's been dominant. Like, the dude had 16 touchdowns last year, I believe, or 13. It was one of those. But looking at Josh Jacobs, there's nobody back there behind him. Like, there's nobody capable to take him off the field.
Marshawn Lloyd can't stay healthy. Emmanuel Wilson's solid for what he is, but like,
he's explosive. Wilson's explosive, but he ain't Jacobs, man.
No, that would be good. I don't think I have any. I'm gonna have to go get some Josh Jacobs now. And if that returns, man, that his cost right now, you know, second, third round, you know, that could be a league winner right away. There.
Everybody's looking away, man.
Shoot. Oh boy. Kyren Williams as well. I'm telling you, your boy, we're going to talk about him here in a second. Kyren Williams, yeah. The disrespect. Anyways, we have to take a break quick. We'll be right back. Talk Cardinals, Rams, and we'll get Laquan out of here and get you guys on with the rest of your day.
Hey, hey, it's Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast. Football season is right around the corner, and there's no better way to lock in your fantasy dominance early than with best ball on DraftKings, where you draft once and ride your roster all season long. And right now, DraftKings is giving all customers a can't-miss offer. Draft one, get one. Enter a lineup in the $15 million best ball contest for just $20, and you'll score another best ball ticket to play free for a share of $15 million, giving you a second shot to win big. It's easy. Just draft your team once, no weekly management required, and let your top scorers automatically start each week. Across the whole season, every breakout start, every clutch play, every touchdown will count toward your quest for a share of $15 million. You want to start your draft with Ja'Marr Chase and come back around with Joe Burrow? Get yourself a nice little Bengals stack? You definitely can. You want to try to play the ADP a little bit and scoop some value on rookies? You could definitely build your roster that way. You could do anything you want in this $15 million best ball contest. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app now to draft your $20 best ball lineup to play for a share of $15 million. Get a second ticket to play free for a share of $15 million. That's two chances to win big without ever setting your lineup again. Draft one, get one. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY at 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. One per customer. Enter the Best Ball $15 million Headliner Contest by September 4th, 2025 to get one bonus entry. $20 entry fee required. Reward expires in 30 days. See terms at DraftKings.com/NFL-Best-Ball. Sponsored by DraftKings.
Laquan, we talked about the 49ers, we talked about the Seattle Seahawks, and now we got to finish out the NFC West. Yeah. We got to talk about one good team, one not so good team, one team you love, one team that has a player that everybody loved and disappointed us, and now they all hate. So, the Arizona Cardinals will lead us off here. Kyler Murray, question mark, question mark, question mark. Do we have Call of Duty coming out this year? I'm not sure. Either way,
Battlefield 6 looks better, man. I don't know.
Where are we here on Kyler? Like, the contract makes it pretty impossible for them to trade him. He's ups and downs, very athletic player, very good moving the football down the field, but definitely still feel like he hasn't gotten there as a passer. Some of the reasons for some of the lack of success for Marvin Harrison, who we'll talk about here in a minute, but where are you on Kyler? Like, do you feel stable for him as a dynasty outlook at a quarterback? Like, we know the talent's there, the rushing's upside's there. He's easily could be a top 10 quarterback for sure. But this is a, do you think he's good enough to keep that job and stay in Arizona as the starter for multiple seasons forward?
I think so. I think this is a prove a year for him because, like, when you look at last year, obviously the offense, it kind of stalled out. Like, Drew Petzing, like, I think he's on the hot seat this year because the offense has not looked great these last two seasons. And Kyler, like, to me, like, you want to believe in the athleticism. Like, you want to believe in his legs. You want to believe that he could be this top five type of quarterback, but it's like we haven't seen it. Like, I do think last season we got a little bit more rushing upside with him being that he's just returning from the injury. Like, two seasons removed from tearing your ACL, man, like, that's going to take some time to get back repped up. And, like, with him talking this offseason, saying he wants to run more, he wants to get the ball to Marvin Harrison, like, I think we already know the talent's there with his legs, but we need to see a next step up as a passer. 69% of Marvin Harrison catches were uncatchable. I mean, targets were uncatchable. That is disgusting. This is your alpha. This is your one. But then you look back, Kyler's always had this issue, like, connecting with his wide receiver ones, making fantasy wide receiver ones. DeAndre Hopkins, Marquise Hollywood Brown. Like, it goes back to where you look at Kyler. It's like, you're going to be stuck to Trey McBride. Like, that is your only reliable target. And Greg Dortch, but they don't want to play three wide receiver sets. So, Drew Petzing, what are you doing? He's your most reliable wide receiver out there in terms of catch rate. So, it's like, I am a little frustrated with this Cardinals offense, but I still believe there is some upside with Kyler to make an improvement. Like, this is the year that he has to take that next leap as a passer, not a runner. Like, we know he's there. Like, we know the 500, 700, 800 yards can be on the table for him, but we need to see him hitting those new heights as a passer with more weapons now.
I agree. That's kind of where I've been. Another interesting stat, above average on first read target throws from Kyler Murray, above average on check down rate for Kyler Murray, and below average on second read throws and 20 plus yard throws. So a guy that hasn't really tested the deep portions of the field as much as you probably would like for this offense, and the check downs more so coming to McBride and Connor and those. So a guy that seems really risk adverse, which isn't always the worst thing, but when you're not taking any shots deep, it's also a problem as well. So yeah, hopefully some improvement there as a deep ball passer, which he has had some success for in his career. So hopefully we see that connection. And like you said, hopefully that connection builds with Marvin Harrison. I think that was one of the biggest things that you saw on film last year, was just everything was just a touch off. Whether it was Harrison overrunning some routes or overrunning zones, soft spots, or Murray was just a touch late, whatever it was just slightly off, you know, and it was easier. It's easier for Murray to make those connections to McBride, because more times than not, McBride, you know, they're either stationary routes or it's just that connection's already been built there. With Harrison, it just wasn't there. So if that steps there, I do think you see Murray do enough to ward off the doubts maybe that anybody has of him. And I, like I said, the Cardinals paid him. They believe in him. I do think that he's there for a bit. I still feel like he's not. If you can find a manager who's a little bit down on him, I still think he's a solid fantasy asset because of that rushing upside. I'm not uber excited to get him. I'm not overpaying by any means for Kyler Murray, but feels like a guy that should be fairly affordable still, and a player that could be a very good quarterback two for you in super flex leagues, or even a quarterback one and one quarterback if you really are in dire needs of a quarterback. All right, the running back room. Connor's come out and said that we're going to see some more Trey Benson this season. Do you think Trey Benson is the long-term answer in Arizona? Obviously, we know Connor's the guy you want this year. Pretty self-explanatory. Benson may see more touches, but do you think Benson could be like the James Connor in the coming seasons, or do you think he would be replaced if Connor was to move on or retire next season?
I hope, because I was really high on Trey Benson in his rookie year, and like, the flashes that we did see, you know, in preseason and then a little bit in the season, like, it was one of those things that he's needed to stay consistent. Like, I've seen a couple of clips of him on YouTube, like, watching him play, and then, like, it doesn't resemble of what we got last year, you know, like his college tape. It didn't resemble, like, he wasn't as explosive. He wasn't hitting the holes as early. Like, he wasn't doing everything that we loved him to be. And then he kind of took a step back on the next level. So hopefully, if he's getting this confidence from the coaching staff, if he's getting this confidence from James Conner, if he's having this self-confidence saying he could be an RB1, then hey, we have to see it done. Like, I can't sit here and say, stamp him as like, yeah, he's the future back. Like, no, we've seen this kind of fall out with many other backs in the league where we have these high hopes for him as prospects, but they don't ever step into the driver's seat. They don't ever step in as the RB1. Mm-hmm. They end up as a lifetime handcuff or a lifetime backup, and it kind of sucks, but Trey Benson has to go out there and prove it this year. Like, I need to see very early in the season, okay, let's see if this is a 1-2 punch, you know, before I start making my antennas go up for a Trey Benson. You know, like, I would hate to invest in now before this season even happens to say, hey, they're getting all this coach speak, this player talk. Like, yeah, I'm going to go grab him now while it's cheap, but it's cheap for a reason, because we haven't seen anything happen yet.
Yeah, I'm a little in on it, and this is why I'll say yes. I will be in on Trey Benson because the cost is fairly affordable. It's something we saw at the college level, though, too, as well. His first season at Florida State, he definitely had some issues with vision and hitting holes as fast as you would hope. Like, he kind of was slow to it, and then he would show his explosion post hitting the hole or getting through the hole at the collegiate level and kind of run away from some guys, which doesn't necessarily happen at the NFL level. But in his final season at Florida State, he kind of corrected that and started to trust his instincts a little more and hit the holes faster. And I feel like he may just be a little slow to the punch. You know, that just might be the way he is. So year one, I'm sure, was a big jump to going, especially from the ACC to the NFL, where everybody's bigger, faster, and stronger, you know, there could be a little bit of a wind up period for him. So I do think this is the year, though. If it doesn't hit for Benson at all, really, this year, you still kind of see those similarities of that slow pace to the hole or not really giving you the explosion you want, then I'd be concerned. Like, then it's he's not going to be it. You know, I wouldn't try to. I wouldn't invest after that, even if there's like, hey, Connor leaves and like they haven't drafted anybody yet. Benson's the only one in the depth chart. Like, I wouldn't be taking shots at it. That feels like a dangerous Zamir White situation if we don't see it. You know what I mean? Like, if you see that development this season, I'm in, but I'm still in on it because I do think that we will see that. So I'm in on Benson. I think that the cost is affordable where he went, even in his rookie drafts. I wasn't totally out on him. I don't believe, like, stamp of approval, like you said. Like, I'm not like championing for Trey Benson, but I also don't dislike Trey Benson. So a lot of times for me, it's cost of investment on players. I can make a case for any either direction. So the cost is there, and I think I'm in on Trey Benson for the future in Arizona. So if you can get him, I'm in on it. Last but not least, another guy disappointing us, Marvin Harrison Jr. All right. Do you think he can live up to what we hoped he would be, which is basically Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. last season? So do you think he's a wide receiver one heights? Like, do you think he can be that? Or do you think he's just not as good as we had hoped?
I don't think the problem is him, though. And I even said this last year, and like, he quietly had 8 touchdowns. He quietly had a decent rookie season. It's the quarterback. Like, it's about him connecting with Kyler. That's all it comes down to. Like, that's what's keeping him from like a 1,200-yard, 1,300-yard season. Like, that's literally the disconnect. And like, it's not him. Like, we've seen him bulk up so he could be a little bit more physical at the catch. We've seen him being dominant downfield as well. Like, there has been times where I'm like, this is the game, like him against the Rams, even though we won that game. But again, us against the, like, against the Cardinals, like, I was really fearful of him beating us deep. And that's exactly what he has shown us. Like, these could be games where he can throw up 100 yards easily. He could be a guy that can have 100 catches easily. It's just connecting with his quarterback. So right now, as a dynasty manager that has a few shares, like, I'm just sitting patient until there's a move or improvement at the quarterback position. I would never give him up because, honestly, look at the talent. Look what he has displayed with dysfunction in this offense. Like, there's nothing but upside. You could make the same case for Malik Nabers, who had 1,200 yards, dysfunction at the quarterback position. He's about to put up video game numbers this year. If Kyler can get that deep ball right, if he can get the connection with Marvin Harrison, we're going to see video game numbers from Marvin Harrison because there's been a huge effort to make him the focal point and the function of this offense. Trey McBride is not supposed to be the function in the operation that makes this car go. Like, he's not supposed to be that, but he is. But you see where he lacked in the touchdown department. He can't be that A1 day one guy for you. So I think this needs to be the year that Kyler gets that connection. Drew Petson, he takes whatever crap that he had last year and put it in the trash. Like, get more creative, get more 3 wide receiver sets and get the offense going.
I think that's the biggest misconception with Harrison too. A lot of people have made the comment of he doesn't create separation. And I think too many people must have thought that he was almost Malik Nabers-esque or like Amon-Ra St. Brown, a guy that's a real huge separator, but he's never been a huge separator. If you turn on the Ohio State tape, he's more of a close window. I'm going to positionally beat you with my reach, my length,
able to adjust his body.
Adjusting his body, or he can kind of get a step on you in like crossing routes or longer developing routes. And that wasn't really that well he portrayed in the offense. And when it was, Kyler was missing throws, or maybe Harrison was slightly off of where he was supposed to be, or didn't slow down in a way that Murray wanted. So that's where I agree with you. Like, last year felt more about the quarterback and the connection than the talent that Harrison has. And we saw the benefits of that in Trey McBride. Like, McBride fed by volume. It wasn't McBride's, not that he's unathletic, but it wasn't Brock. McBride's not Brock Bowers. He's not George Kittle. Like, he's a little bit of a lumberer, and you see that in the yards after catch stats and why he couldn't get in the end zone. Like, he can't pick up, you know, 3 or 4 yards sometimes after the catch. Like, he just kind of catches it and gets there. He can stretch the seam. He can do all the things you want from a receiving tight end, but he's not really super athletic. So like you said, they wanted to be Harrison. They didn't spend a top 10 pick on him to not use him. I do think that this is a chance, and I've been championing for Harrison all offseason, saying if you can get him on the DL, like, do it. Like, it's going to come. He will make that connection at some point, and you're going to see the benefits of it. So I'm all in on it. I agree. I'm glad we're lockstep there, because I'm tired of people dissing my boy Marvin Harrison. And they only have one share of him, which peeves me off, but still, I need to go get more. Problem is, everybody agrees with me that I play with. Just the problem. Anyways, on to the Rams. We'll close this out with the fun. All right.
Yeah, man.
I feel like not a ton of this is really more of a redraft vibe with the Rams. Like, I don't know if I'm investing in much of this team dynasty wise.
Very small window.
You know, but like, a lot of these guys are really nice for redraft this season, outside of maybe the quarterback.
Come on, our boy
Matt Stafford here. I don't know. Are you concerned? Like, it sounds like they don't really care. Like, I mean, they care, but they're not concerned that he's not going to be there week one. It seems like they're like, oh, yeah, he's going to be all right. Just not going to play in training camp or preseason, basically, which he may not have anyways. Depends on how you go about that. But are you worried? Like, do you think it's him? And even if you are, like, can Garoppolo maybe be serviceable in this offense?
Now, I was at the joint practice last week, and there was, like, very little concern about Stafford. And Stafford was actually out there. Like, he's throwing the ball to kids. Like, he was out there about with the team watching practice. And Jimmy Garoppolo, side note on him real quick, he looked solid. And again, like, if we have to push that red button where Jimmy has to go out there for the first couple of weeks of the season, I'm okay. Because our schedule, it's kind of doable. Like, Jimmy can go out there and be 3-1. Like, I think the only game that in our first 4 weeks that I have questions about is obviously that Eagles game. That one's circled. So it's like, Stafford, to me, like, right now, there's no level of concern because there's really no need for concern because we are a month away from week one. So I think right now the vibes are chilled. And look, next week we might see him out there in that joint practice against the Chargers. Like, McVay talked about it today, saying, like, you know, he's going to be going through some workouts. He's going to see how he responds to it. And Monday he should be suiting up for practice. Like, that's great news. Like, everything that has progressed from the story has just went forward and forward to more good news. I know there was a mix up in the beginning saying it's back soreness, it's nothing, but then it turned into some, you know, something more than what it was actually sold to us for. But I do think that the level of concern is very low, and like, having Jimmy back there, it just makes us have like more clarity of like, all right, we have a backup now. It's not like we're sitting with Sean Mannion or looking Stetson Bennett come in. Like, that's not the case. We have a actual backup who's been a starter before that can get us through some of the adversity that we're probably going to have to deal with if Stafford's not available.
I like it. And I agree. I feel like we've seen plenty of these cases of the first few weeks of the season. You can get by as long as, like you said, you know, you get your backup in there, you get you 500 even. In most situations of teams that like the Rams or more contending like rosters, that you can kind of survive a little bit of time. And my main concern would be with Stafford of just like, can Garoppolo support this? I think my answer would be yes. We saw it with Baker there when he came in just a few years ago in the style offense. So I think Garoppolo, like you said, it's not Stetson Bennett. It's a guy that has shown to play in this league and has won games. So I think he would not be, I wouldn't be worried 2025 for the players that would need to be supported by the quarterback position, even if we miss Stafford for a bit. I don't think it's going to be Hall season. I probably am avoiding Stafford in redraft just because maybe if he falls far enough, and you're probably not really even drafting him, maybe Superflex. Maybe
Superflex. One quarterback leagues, you're probably not. Like, where he's going is in the deep depths. Like, I think quarterback 22, maybe 21, maybe further now. Like, he's in the deep depths of like redraft. You're probably not touching him.
Yeah. And you can't really do anything with dynasty. Like, you're not going to get anything back for him. Like, at this point, you just ride it out. Like, let him ride off in the sunset. And, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Biggest question I feel like in this entirety of this offense is, can we get Puka Nacua and Davante Adams as both top 12 wide receivers?
Yeah. I love how you teed that, man, because that's how I have them. Two top 12 wide receivers. Abso-freaking-lutely. And, like, seeing these guys operate in person, it's pretty amazing. And, like, I cannot wait for Stafford to get out there and be able to execute this offense at the highest level because, man, the attention that Puka brings alone is just you're not going to leave him. You're going to respect him. You're going to respect 12 over there. But then the other distraction on the other side of that perimeter is Davante Adams. And it's like, God, the way that you go about this offense, like as a defender, you're going to have to deal with one of them. You're going to have to leave one of them by themselves. And Puka, we know he's the yak king. You're not getting him down off of first contact. He is going to run through you, around you. He's going to get the yard. So I do think that if it is Jimmy, obviously if it's Stafford, we can have both of these guys coexisting. Like, I think Adams may have more touchdowns, but Puka will have more yards and catches, if that makes sense. These guys can both put up 1,000 yards easily. And I think that with this offense, the way it's operating, like you have Tutu Atwell, you have the depth at the wide receivers where Jordan Whittington, Kanate Mumfield, these guys play their roles. Tutu alone, I think he's a headache. You have to respect his speed as well. And there was one play that I saw at the joint practice at the Cowboys camp where Adams was actually the decoy. Like he was playing like the distraction where he dragged two defenders to respect his game, where Tutu catches a bomb from Jimmy G up the perimeter because they left him alone. Like you can't do that. So there's going to be different variables of this offense where guys are going to be able to be coexisting and both being fantasy relevant on a week to week basis.
Is there anyone else behind him that you think is truly weekly viable? Or do you feel like they're best ball players in like Whittington, Atwell? Or do you think there's going to be a third that emerges as a maybe a low end flex, you know, like not top 36, but like borderline flex
player? Hot take. Borderline flex player. I think Tutu Atwell could put up 700 yards this season, 700 plus. And I think a decent amount of touchdowns in there. Like I think the floor is 5 touchdowns just based on what I've seen in this joint practice. I know it's joint practice scrimmage and it's preseason, but man, you're going to have to respect 12 and 17. And that just leaves that wide receiver 3 wide open for guys to come in and play their roles. Like I think Tutu Atwell has a chance with McVay this offseason saying, hey, I'm glad he's back in the building. I want to use him more. I need to get Tutu the ball more. Making that an emphasis on you already saying, hey, this offseason, we're getting more versatile. This is going to be a versatile offense inspired by Liam Cohen, by the way. So it's like, I'm looking at this as like, the wide receiver 3, they're going to be like borderline flex on a week-to-week basis. Best ball guys, I think Jordan Whittington, he kind of fills in if there's injury. Kanate Mumfield, man, I love his game, man. Crazy route runner. Like, he's in a room with Davante Adams and soaking in everything. Like, I got a chance to speak to him. And, like, he's literally learning the game at the highest level from one of the guys that you honestly can say is one of the best in the game. And like, he already has the tools as a separator, strong hands. And like, he's one of those guys that is just trying to pay attention to detail. So I think he's going to make the team. And there is some type of dynasty investment in these wide receivers, because this is the strongest depth that the Rams have had at the wide receiver room, honestly.
And Adams is obviously up there in age. Someone's going to have to fill in for him, and maybe it could be in-house, like you mentioned. Yeah, with Mumfield, are all those guys learning from a guy, honestly, in Adams, that took the long road to becoming one of the greats in the league. Like, it wasn't really handed to him day one, like your guys, and not that there was handed to, but Justin Jefferson and Chase, those guys that kind of just came out of the scene and exploded. Like, Adams took a bit. He had to, you know, make that adjustment. So that's a player that's very good for some of these younger receivers to learn from, because a lot of these guys are later draft picks and they have to scratch, grind, and work their way to earning those targets, as opposed to some people that just the talent and the already earning in the collegiate ranks, we'll call lead target in an offense.
Facts.
All right. Running back room. Are we scared? Is Kyren doomed? All right. I love me some Jarquez Hunter. I do. All right. I do love me some Jarquez Hunter. But I'm on the side that Kyren's not doomed. Let's be real. He had an absurd amount of touches, absurd amount of opportunities at the running back position last year as well. So I'm fine with some of it coming off. Like, go ahead, put Hunter, put Corum out there a little bit, take a little bit off him. I still think Kyren Williams is a a dynamite dynasty running back asset just because of the offense. When they're in the red zone, they're running the football. Like, I know we're talking Adams getting some touchdowns, but like, red zone comes, it's Kyren time. Like, that's how this offense runs. It's how it's operated for years, whether it was Kyren, when we've seen Gurley come through here, we've seen multiple running backs come through, and it red zone is the running back's territory. So I don't see Corum or Hunter taking that from Williams. I see them more as off speed guys. Still probably some viable dynasty value in either of those, whoever you choose. If you had to choose one of them, who is it? And are you more on the side where Kyren's doomed?
Kyren's the RB1. Let me make that clear. He's the RB1. Now, we can go to Buffalo. James Cook, he's the RB1. But he was used more efficiently. He wasn't over 50% of snaps. So it's like, if we can get this room to where Kyren can be used more efficiently, where the workload is not totally on his back, there is worth investment in the Jarquez Hunter. There's worth investment in Blake Corum. When we're looking at this system, I understand, like, the red zone, that was his baby. Like, that was his ball. That's who he was these last two seasons. But Adams coming in, I do think the touchdowns come down. So if you're expecting him to have that same touchdown workload, you're going to be in for a pain. But I do think that Kyren is great on the ground. He's a great pass blocker. So that's going to utilize his talents to keep him on the field. But again, ball security, that's my biggest issue. That's definitely going to keep you off the field. That's definitely going to get your workload split. That's definitely going to have like a Jarquez Hunter who has explosiveness and ball security. There were the two things that Kyren lacked last season. And I do want to make a note, like, the last time that the Rams had a top 10 rushing attack was 2020. Kevin O'Connell was the offensive coordinator. Liam Cohen was on that staff. We split up the backfield between Darrell Henderson, Cam Akers, and Malcolm Brown. A very effective and efficient backfield. That was the last time the Rams were able to say they were top of the table in explosive plays. They were top of the table in rushing yards and top of the table in even rushing touchdowns. So the blueprint has been there. You wanting Kyren to be this workhorse touching the ball over 75% of the times does not make sense to me, because it has not worked. It has not worked for us. And I honestly think that dynasty owners, you should feel comfortable now that he's signed. He's there for the next 3 years. I do think there's worth investment in Jarquez Hunter over Blake Corum, because Blake Corum is kind of similar type to a Kyren Williams. So if Kyren goes down, that's when Blake will come up. But I think Jarquez Hunter, he has this role that I think that is just exclusive to him. Like, when we need a pop on the outside, it's going to be him. When we need a big play, it's going to be him. Even Mike LaFleur as LaFleur as our offensive coordinator, almost said his brother as our offensive coordinator.
Hey, one of them.
Yeah. One of them guys, he likes peppering the running backs with targets. So I think that can even live with a Jarquez Hunter or a Blake Corum. Like, Kyren, he gets some targets, but he's not a guy like a Breece Hall or a Gibbs, you know? Like, I think that can live between these two backup running backs, though.
I feel like it's Kyren will still get some of it, but I agree with you. When they drafted Corum, it felt like just a replacement to Kyren. Like, if Kyren goes down, Corum is our plug-in for his role in this offense. And it just felt like they didn't add another piece. And I think that's why Kyren still was just fed last year, because they didn't really have like a different change of pace guy yet. Where Jarquez Hunter is going to bring that. The speed's there, and he still doesn't lack the physicality. Yeah. He's a quick mover.
So tough.
Very laterally quick as well. Yeah. And just in the blink of an eye, he's gone. You know, like, it was surprising he didn't get more hype through the draft cycle from fantasy football analysts in general. Like, it just felt like a guy that we as a community would have really, really liked. But it was surprising.
This class,
like,
is so deep. There's only so many names, but so many characters you could fit on Twitter, man.
I'm just saying, man. He was one of them. I remember I had early in the cycle, I had Garrett Price on from Dynasty Nerds as well. He was a guy that liked Hunter too. Like, he's very slept on and a very steal, honestly, for the Rams. I think he will be a great piece football-wise. Fantasy, I see some value. Again, the cost. Like, I'm not investing a lot in him. No. But he wasn't expensive in rookie drafts, so you probably have him. I'm excited to have him. I will hold him. Last but not least, and then we will cut you loose, Laquan, the tight end position.
Oh, boy.
Is there anything here? I love me some Terrence Ferguson, big Oregon fan over here, so that's always fun. Tyler Higbee's been fun in the past, but is there room here in this tight end room in Dynasty. It just feels like a room that there's been some success, but never really like a fantasy staple. Do you think that that's here, or do you think this is the offense and this is where that tight end position lives and dies? You get some, you know, bye week fill in type of stuff, blips on the radar, but never really a full time starter for us as fantasy managers.
I don't see any full time starters here. I mean, like you love that they went and grabbed Ferguson. I think he's going to be a huge impact in the red zone. I think that McVay may throw a little bit more 12 personnel to kind of have him and Higbee as that Gerald Everett and Higbee kind of show that we've seen in the past with the Rams. And like, even then, when that was at its heights of success, like those guys literally split their production in half, and you don't want that for fantasy. Like, it's going to be impossible to kind of match up. This is the week. Even if you have like the best matchup possible, like this defense has allowed 8 tight ends this season score touchdown, it's not likely going to be the Rams. It's likely going to be full gas, no breaks to the wide receivers. And I think, you know, Tyler Higbee, he has a knack for scoring against the Giants. I mean, that's the only time I feel safe against the Giants. I mean, that's
when I got the crystal ball. I go, nope,
there you go.
Crystal ball, and it says he's scoring a touchdown.
Just like Boston Scott, man. Like, it's one thing, man, the Giant killer. But I do think, you know, like, investing in Taron Ferguson, because I actually drafted him in the rookie drafts this year in the startup. So I do feel like, you know, I'm hoping that there may be a change, or where, like, you know, Higbee is off into the sunset. We grab another tight end where Ferguson becomes that asset. He becomes like one of the guys in that, you know, offense that can be productive on the week to week, because he could play, man. Like, he could ball. Like, and I mentioned the red zone. Like, he is very good at disguising himself of is he's going for a block or if he is going for a route. And like, I love that creativity that McVay's going to be able to get his hands on.
All right. I like it. I feel like you said it well there with like the cost to get in on them isn't bad. So like, it's not the end of the world. Do I think there's a solid starter? No.
So
that's the NFC West in a nutshell, Laquan. So before we get out of here, you're a busy man. You got lots going on. So let everybody know where they can find you and what you have. Maybe free time, because I feel like you're probably busy every day, but anyways, let them know where you're at.
You guys can find me at Real Deal Fantasy, man, and of course you can catch me at NFL Fantasy at NFL Network with Marcus Graham, Michael Florio, twice a week. Every week we're going to be spitting hot fire, and of course you can find my stuff at FTN Fantasy. See the face, you know the case. It's fire content only on all your timelines, man. So Real Deal Fantasy.
Love it. Definitely shoot him a follow. I'm sure you already do if you're listening to this podcast and you follow me. I'm sure you are. But if you perhaps are not for some odd reason, definitely shoot Laquan a follow. And as always, please remember, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. It is greatly appreciated from myself and FTN. And as always, thank you for the listen. Take care.